Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Don't know what happened to my beloved co-host, Mike Cosentino. Oh, here he comes in the door now, just as we're starting to broadcast. And Silent Gary, our producer, has also arrived. Grab a chair, Michael. We're talking about climate change today, and we have three folks. Introduce them. Of organizational work. Some of them have a scientific, one of them has scientific background. Another does theater in order to promote climate change. So I heard from Marty Landau. And so Marty, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and the main sponsor of all these events. If you're in Sedona, folks, you'll see more than a dozen events about climate change over the last few weeks, and there's some more to come. So, Marty, tell us a little bit about how this got going. What's the organizational thing?
My name's Marty Landa. My wife and I took over convening a group called Inspiration of Sedona, which was just a general community building group. We took that over about a year ago, just organizing and convening. And the numbers had dwindled. It actually had been quite a big group for a while. But we moved the focus from that group to try to build the numbers again to watching, you know, cutting-edge documentaries. We started with Years of Living Dangerously, which is about climate change, made by James Cameron. And it was a series made last year. And we watched that series over 3 months. And that inspired us to want to do something more in the community. We thought about a global climate march because we are familiar with and we're connected with 350.org, a big international organization that is who the founder of that wrote the actual first book about global warming. And we wanted to do a march, but, you know, it's hard to do that in a small town. And he said, well, what's needed? Awareness raising. People don't know about climate change. People don't understand any of a lot of the information about climate change. We think we do, but when you start digging into it, it's very vast and it's not that complex, but the holistic picture of it encompasses such a range of things. And that's what these events were about, to try to demonstrate that, show that, and raise awareness about it.
So how many events have you had, Marty?
I think we've now had about 10, and we have about 10 more to go.
Great. And you'll tell us about those events in a minute, but let's talk to the other panel. Get right on top of the mic.
Hi.
Hi. Introduce yourself. You dress up like a polar bear at places to visualize climate change.
Yeah, I dress up as all sorts of things. I've been the sun, and I've been a bee, to raise awareness about the issue with bees and polar bear recently, all sorts of things.
And you're basically a performance artist, and you work to try to raise awareness by dressing like a polar bear and going to the places. And
yeah, actually, my name is Pascal Vivi, and I'm a performance artist and mask maker, and I try to show, so I'm not the best speaker, but I like to visualize things and try to show things in a visual manner, artistic, creative manner.
So when you started this work to promote climate change, you had performance art, you had lectures, you had movies, you have more stuff coming, and you have someone with a scientific background over here. Bob, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, good morning. Bob McCormick. I retired a few years ago from Midwestern University, Purdue University, in the Forestry Department in Natural Resources, doing planning work, really with environmental planning specialist in that department for a number of years. And so the climate change connection comes about with land use planning and transportation. So we worked also with NOAA. We were under the NOAA umbrella as far as Sea Grant in the department. And most of our focus is how to develop better planning to produce walkable, compact communities, which also affects how we drive and fuel savings. So there's this connection. A lot of states are looking at sustainable growth and how that would affect the driving and transportation, which is a big part of global climate emissions, transportation. So,
yeah, that's certainly it. When I lived in New York City, and you can imagine the amount of traffic there, and trying to ride a bicycle in Manhattan was like a death sentence. When I was younger, I did it for a while. When I lived in New York, even when I was seeing my clients and I designed websites, I always walked everywhere.
Yep.
Almost all my clients were, I always lived on the west side. All of them were on the east side. I walked over there and walked everywhere. You get to Sedona, and it's beautiful here, but walking along 89A is not a lot of fun, Bob. I mean, you know, there's no cover. In summer it's hot. What can something be done about Sedona to improve the situation?
Well, that's a very good point. And, you know, while Sedona has some great qualities as far as parts of the cities are walkable to grocery stores, we would promote the complete streets concept, where you enable more of the bikeways and walkways to be enhanced. In other words, yeah, we have this little strip out here on the side of the road, but there's ways to make that safer, and ways of coloring asphalt. There's ways to make walkability safer, a number of smart growth techniques, but complete streets, which includes bicycle-friendly walkability, and then transit. Transit, and it may not apply in such a small community, but I think you're seeing buses here already, and
I
more
think
of
they're
that.
Discussing that, yep, to some extent, Bob, to, yep, to take mostly tourists around,
right,
the town. They tried,
right,
something before. It didn't work out,
right,
very well.
Right.
When we were in Spain, the sidewalks in many of the places were all textured, and I understand, yeah, that a lot of it is for people in wheelchairs or who are not getting around. I understand it has a, right, practical thing. But it's also very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, when we were in Sevilla, which is the hottest place in Europe. It's not as hot as Phoenix, but pretty close. But they had screening over the street. Mm-hmm. In other words, they had giant screens over the street in summer that cut down the amount of heat reaching the ground and stuff. Yeah. What could be done to make the walkways more livable, I guess, or walkable? Because they're just not inviting. You know, I've done it quite a few times, and it's, you know, it's just not much fun. You know, there's the traffic is roaring by, and the stores are, you know, kind of all way back.
Well, that's a very good point. There's a number of things that can be done. One of those is widening sidewalks and walkable areas. There's a number of things like trees and plantings that would be interspersed in these areas. So that what you're doing is calming traffic down, calming it. And some ways, some places have even made the streets even a one-way only for deliveries. And so if you look at some of these high-traffic pedestrian areas where they've converted the streets even to total pedestrian use. Now, that might not work on 89A, but
no,
it might work in some parts of it, like, you know, the uptown area where I know they're discussing things there, you go to places, you know, that are high traffic pedestrian, and businesses actually improve with more pedestrian use and less car traffic sometimes.
So I know that the big issue in our little town here is traffic. I think what you're talking about is the effect not only of trying to improve the traffic situation and the walkability and all of that, but how this impacts climate change.
Right. The more uses that you have close by, work, play uses, that cuts down on vehicle miles traveled, right? So we increase the efficiency of cars and trucks and things, but they're expecting traffic car ownership to double in the world by 2030. and we need to cut the amount of traffic trips down. We have a real efficient car, but if we drive it a long ways, that cuts into the whole principle of reducing trips. So grocery stores, walkable, not using the car. Three-fourths of the trips that people take are less than a mile, three-quarters of a mile, but people still drive. So, but having these uses nearby, having the groceries, the hardware stores, the different, that's what the goal is, compact, walkable communities. And, you know, these things are being done all over the world. You mentioned Europe. And they're great examples. I was in Amsterdam a few years ago, more bicycles than cars, right? Big, wide bicycle paths. Yep. They have the light first in Amsterdam. The other traffic waits. So there's a lot of ways to do it. And there's places that are great examples.
When we were in Europe, if you go to the restroom in a restaurant, the lights all come on and off automatically. Everything is set with motion detectors to cut down on the electrical usage. Marty, in the United States, there's tremendous disbelief in climate change that you don't even see in the conservative parties in Europe and most of the rest of the world.
I think the thing to keep in mind is what are the interests involved and why does any significant amount of denial or disagreement that whether climate change exists in the first place or if acknowledgement, which is starting to grow in that consensus that has been in denial, becomes more of a perspective of, well, it's not man-made and there's nothing we can do about it. It's not anthropogenic, which is man-made, and it's just happening naturally and has happened before. And that's a big argument. And there there are interest-wise $1 billion has been spent in the last 20 years by organizations, the same ones like Heartland Institute and the now over 100 other similar institutes. And that money has been spent by fossil fuel companies who have interest in making sure that we don't believe that climate change exists or that if it exists, it's natural and we can't do anything about it. That has now come to light because documents were revealed and found from ExxonMobil, who 20 years ago knew that climate change existed internally in their memos. And that's going to be taken to the Supreme Court now over the next years to come by all the environmental organizations that are banding together, including Greenpeace, 350.org, and many others. So this idea of denial and disbelief came about from the same entities that told us, and there's a film called Merchants of Doubt that people can see that's a documentary that kind of goes through and explains all these organizations and how they operate. It's a very sophisticated, tremendous amounts of money, and it's all about trying to convince us for economic gain for a limited number of corporations that control massive wealth. They did it for cigarettes.
They delayed the implementation of processes to cut down the use of cigarettes for years by hiring their own scientists and spending millions of dollars. And this is a new iteration of the same thing. I mean, I come from Oklahoma, where I believe the senators are wholly owned subsidiaries of the oil and gas industry. They're certainly leading climate change deniers.
Well, when you look at the climate change denial mechanism that's present in these organizations, the supposed scientists, which supposedly represent 3%, meaning that 97% of scientists consensus that are peer reviewed, that are the only side, there are no other scientists outside those 97% that are in any major international or national, governmental or otherwise body of scientific information that agree with the fact that climate change would not exist, and those scientists that are in that 3%. Many of them, not just one or two, have been paid upwards of $300,000 by organizations like Heartland Institute in their funding to get the result they're looking for.
So there's no coincidence that Paris climate talks are going on now, and you guys are in the studios of Chasm Radio chatting about efforts on a local level for climate awareness, apparently. My question was going to be, why now? You have an organization called Inspiration of Sedona, and you have a Facebook page, and you are dedicating at least part of that to this climate, local climate change awareness effort. Is that a fair summation?
Definitely.
You have some things going on over at the Posse Grounds Sedona Performing Arts Hub, if I got the name correct. Red Earth Theater over there, Kate Hawks and the crew. Now you have some performances coming up, so let's talk about events. Steve said, you've gone through some events already, mm-hmm. where you've done some acting, or at least some presentation, some performance in costume, and we have some more. Let's talk about, is there something coming up with the Performing Arts Hub? Didn't they just did something? And then you have a Flagstaff Climate March. Is that let's talk about. So pick an event that you want to focus on, and let's jump into that.
Okay, just to kind of preempt that, the events are done trying to create a holistic picture view of climate change, not doom and gloom, inspiring, not just films, but ways that affect us and motivate us and inspire us to do something, to look at the information, but not just have it be facts and figures. And that's what the performance stuff is about. It's to try to touch the emotional level and move us in a way where we feel and care about the nature itself and connect back to ourselves via nature. And that's why there are films like Tonight, which is Aluna at the Hub. And Aluna is a film about an indigenous culture that actually came out of hiding 23 years ago, that the BBC interviewed when they came out of hiding and made a film called From the Heart of the World. And they're called the Kogi. They're from northern Colombia, and they've lived on this mountain. They were one of the only last remaining known. Well, at the time, 23 years ago, they were unknown. They had been hidden. They had escaped the conquistadors and lived up in the top of the mountains on Sierra Nevada's de Santa Marta in northern Colombia. And they came out of hiding because they had divined their mamos, which are their priests, so to speak, who live in darkness for 18 years from birth till they come out of darkness at 18 years old, and they are officially a mamo. They divined that we were going to take them down with us, meaning that we were destroying the world and that they needed to send us a warning. And so this film is the second film after 23 years ago when the BBC made it, because they had called him back and said they didn't listen. We gave the warning, they didn't listen, and now there's a further message, and they've brought us more into their culture and understanding of how they did that divining, why we need to take care of the water, and a deeper understanding. That's what this film about. We have a local person who co-founded the Chocolate Tree Restaurant, and his daughter owns it and runs it, David War. And he'll be speaking tonight, because when the Kogi were convinced by the BBC in the second film several years ago, they actually did a world tour of a number of cities that convinced them to leave Colombia for the first time after they'd come out of the mountains 23 years ago and tour the world. And when they came to Sedona, they actually stopped and did a speaking engagement, and one of their mamos had talked to the public at the high school here. They came over to the Chocolate Tree, and David War met them and came up with this idea of supporting them to purchase back some property that was a sacred site for in Colombia for the Kogi. And David spent 10 days with the Kogi living on the edge of one of their villages. So he's one of a handful of people in the world that have been able to do that, and he'll speak tonight about that at the film. And that's at the Hub.
And you have a whole bunch more events coming up. I have a friend who was an anthropologist in the mountains in Mexico, and she asked the local people, said, why are you living up here? It's really hard to grow food up here. There's not much up here. It's cold. It's not really very conducive to living. They said to her, why are you living here? And they said, we're living here because the Spanish are down in the lowland. So they had the idea from 400 or 500 years ago. They had fled to the mountains, and they were still there. So I think that's great. You have a thing. What else do you have coming up this next week? I see it looks like 10 events coming up. Are they mostly movies? And they're at the public library, and they're at the Mary D. Fisher Theater.
The events that will happen tomorrow are two. One of them is a premiere film that had never been had a theatrical release. That's called Planete. And that's about, and this is, tomorrow is our day of, out of all the events, specifically the solutions day, meaning we're going to talk about the variety of aspects of solutions, starting with Planete, which is a film about animal agriculture and food choices and how that relates to climate change and how we can do something in that regard and how those relate to climate change. And that's at 4 o'clock at the Sedona Public Library. And then in the evening, that's part one of our solutions event. And part two will address renewable energy, recycling, and divestment from fossil fuels and reinvestment. And that film that we're going to show is actually, it was out earlier this year, and it has had a theatrical release, but this is a new director's cut because the director was very excited about what we're doing. And he actually has a recut of the film that's got 5 extra minutes of footage. It's called Future of Energy, Lateral Power to the People. And it's specifically about renewable energy and that revolution. But we are also going to have there John Neville from Sustainable Arizona, and also he's also part of Keep Sedona Beautiful, started that, and Sustainable Alliance, which includes the Recycling Center. And we'll have Gene Tarosi from the Recycling Center, who will be speaking about recycling. We're going to show a short little piece about recycling and some stuff about divestment. And then there'll be that that panel, which includes Greg Collins from Verde Solar Power to talk about solar related to the film, John Neville to talk about the whole renewable energy revolution, Gene Tarosi to talk about recycling, and then two folks coming down from NAU that are involved in the fossil fuel divestment.
Certainly a part of this. I mean, you know, like John Neville and Sustainable Arizona have been going on a long time, and some of the other things that you mentioned, you're tying in some of the really ongoing Sedona things.
So kind of amazing job, don't you think, Mike?
This moment at this time.
Brought so many people together on this?
Absolutely. That you know, one of the questions that, you know, we ask is why, and, you know, why now? And we know the answer to that. We got Paris going on, 190 countries who think it's important enough. And so apparently this has filtered down to you three in a huge way, in a big way, and you've gone ahead and organized some of these things and included and incorporated some of the already existing things into this effort. It does seem, and I think, you know, driving my pickup over here this morning, and
politically incorrect as ever, Mike.
I mean, actually, my Corolla's out there. I lied about the pickup, but
pickup has seen better years.
I drive into law and I see Tabak's pickup, and I have envy. But we're not going there. We are talking about what the frustration of what a small group of people can do in a, you know, a mountainside community here compared to what is being done. The polluters are out there, and they're big, and they're not worried about how they get to work. They're not worried about what kind of energy they're using, and so on. They're not worried about those guys in Colombia.
Or the little islands, I guess, the Marshall Islands are flooding.
Yes. Mm.
I mean, that still, to a lot of people, the islands in the Pacific and the other places that are flooding, the Indian Ocean, are just a long way away. I mean, they read about the glaciers melting in Greenland.
Mm. Let me ask the engineer, is it too late?
Well,
is it too late? Are we done?
No, I think that's why we're here. And that's, you know, hats off to Marty and Pash here to invoke a grassroots effort. That's what all the countries that are out there, 200 in Paris, they realize that it's going to take a grassroots groundswell effort among local people, indigenous people, local people. Or we may not make the targets because, the political and all the bureaucracy that entails these large conferences, it's going to take the people saying we have to do something. And that's what this is about. I think it's not too late, but pretty soon we will cross those thresholds that, you know, above 2 degrees Celsius in the world. And you mentioned the flooding. We have flooding going on right here in the U.S., South Florida and in South Beach area. Ask them about it. They've already got flooding in those streets, and we have it hitting close to home. It's not just the Maldives and the Marshall Islands, but there's places close to home in the Arctic cities are moving off of the shoreline. You know, it's a more dramatic in the Arctic and the poles, but things are happening right here too.
Is there any discussion in your upcoming activities about the what you can do to support the Paris conference? Because that's where the decisions are being made.
I think the important thing is to understand something about the conference on climate change with the UN, and that is they've met. This is the 21st time. All of these are intentionally by these governments non-binding, meaning it's basically not just for show, but it's to try and make an effort. But ultimately, it's very difficult for governments to have these be non-binding, which means ultimately often nothing gets done. And to this point, after 21 years and 21 times of this UN Paris climate, everyone is sick of governments not doing anything, because it is a big issue whether we want to acknowledge it or not, and something can be done. But like Bob is saying, the grassroots level, which is why we're doing, is to make people aware of the issue, why it's an issue, how significant of a challenge this is for mankind that we're ignoring to a great extent. We're not getting electric cars in big droves. We are not making the changes with our animal agriculture and our food choices. We are moving forward on renewable energy to some extent, but it's slow. It's not fast enough. The newest climate models from James Hansen, the NASA scientist who started this whole thing with Congress in the 80s, are that if we do not have a shift beginning to happen at an 8 to 10% reduction of our energy usage from fossil fuels in the next 2 years, we're talking 24 months, if we don't begin that process to make up, because originally we were talking 3% reduction, well, the other countries are not doing enough, and they're going the opposite direction. India is building far more coal plants than ever, massive, hundreds of them all over to support this third world development. If we don't do that, the newest climate change models from Hansen's group show that we are going to already exceed the 2 degrees centigrade, which is going to cause levels of sea rise, because we're talking about 3 feet of sea rise for every degree of temperature, mean average temperature we increase. That means we're talking 135 million people in Bangladesh are going to be displaced. This affects us not because it's far away, but because it affects national security. It affects food issues around the world, because those people are going to be displaced and be homeless and have no income and have no ability to have food. We're talking about international calamity that is going to affect us, and it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it's not going to happen someday 100 years from now. We're talking about soon, and this changes. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the ones that have the power to make the changes, because we have the wealth and we have the potential to have the will and make choices. And that's what our Solutions Day is about, to try to present it in an inspiring way, not like doom and gloom, because unfortunately the reality of the current climate models are we are going to exceed 2 degrees centigrade because it happens over time. It doesn't happen instantly. And when we don't make the changes that we need to make, and we lead the world, we show the way. We may be only 15 or 16% of the world's total global greenhouse gases, but we set the example, whether we want to believe it or not, and the rest of the world follows, because we're the economic leader. And so we need, as individuals, to make those choices.
This could send off migrations of people even more than we see, masses of refugees, climate change refugees. And what we're seeing is this: is the growing instability of the weather in places, expansion of the deserts and stuff.
Well, that's
so.
It
is easy. I do agree with you, Marty. It's easier to see the downside of all this, the darker or shadow side of not doing anything, than it is to see the positive side of doing something.
Yeah, and I think that's the exciting things about the film we'll be showing tomorrow night, Future of Energy. The intention was to find things that inspire us that are actually uplifting, not just doom and gloom. We have plenty of that. We have plenty of numbers like the stuff I was talking about, the climate models that make us worry about what's coming. But to actually say renewable energy is possible, it is happening. The solar is increasing in leaps and bounds. It's now the same price or less in almost every state in the United States than the cost of other forms of energy. But we are not making those choices because the fossil fuel companies don't want us to make those choices.
Or in Arizona, you have APS pumping money into the Corporation Commission so that they're buying the regulators who are regulating them.
Well, plus they're choosing to go natural gas, which unfortunately Obama had been convinced and promoted as a interim clean energy source, which it's not, because we now have, from James Cameron's work and investigative reporting that was done in Years Living Dangerously and other scientists that have stepped forward, showing that the leakage rates that were claimed from these fracked natural gas extractions that are going all over the world, but particularly huge in the United States, thousands and thousands of wells, have a leakage rate instead of the less than 1% that they've been reporting to our EPA for years, and the EPA doing no independent verification and depending on the industry for those numbers, is actually as high as 17% leakage. And if they, when they start to look into these now more than they have in the past, which Obama is instituting with the EPA, we're going to find out that we may very likely have a methane footprint that is a effector for greenhouse gases and global warming that is equal to or greater than a carbon footprint. And we have not even begun to have that public discussion in a bigger way. And here we have APS increasing their usage, doubling it in the next 5 years announced. And that is scary stuff because we're talking about 3 or 4 degrees centigrade rise. If we take all that fossil fuel and all that gas out of the ground and we start burning it up and do it without considering the consequences.
We even have the Attorney General of Arizona trying to stop the modesty legislation that's coming through about emissions. We're talking with folks from Inspiration of Sedona. They put on a whole series of climate change movies and talks and performances. Tell us about, you're going to have a march in Flagstaff this weekend, and can the polar bear maybe tell us, are you going to be a polar bear for the march?
I haven't quite decided if we're going to do polar bears or if we're going to do the sun. We at the local farmers market, we had the sun with fossil fuel. We were out there offering people the choice to embrace their choice of alternative energy or fossil fuels. And my friend Mark Stevens was dressed up as a very scary fossil fuel creature, gooey, whatever. And I was the sun, and I got a lot more hugs, but I think that actually he was the more popular choice.
She's also a very handsome polar bear, you know. A little skinny for a polar bear.
Well, it's a serious subject.
I think it's wonderful that you're not sticking to just, you know, Bob's kind of scientific approach, but you're also doing the art and you're also doing the politics of it.
Well, she was a climate change refugee polar bear.
Right.
That's why she was skinny.
Oh,
with her.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
And that's happening, right?
Absolutely.
Polar bears are getting more endangered by climate change. Their whole habitat is getting erased because they're huge, powerful animals, but they're dependent on a fairly small range of climatic detailed situations in order to survive.
Well, I heard Congress is not going to allow any polar bears into the U.S. because they killed a fish, I think, or something like that. I don't know. Go ahead.
We use the polar bear just because it's an icon, really, and sort of playing off the idea of, you know, a climate change refugee with the polar bear in Sedona. You know, sort of.
Unfortunately, we're going to see human refugees from climate change, too. So tell us about the march. Why don't you tell us about the march in Flagstaff?
The march is coming up. We wanted to do one in Sedona, but we were afraid we didn't have enough people who would come to that. So we're going to join the Flagstaff group up there. And we'll have to double check the website for the time on that and place.
But it's the 12th.
It's on the 12th. And also on the 11th and the 12th, the Red Earth Theater will be offering a climate change show called This Earth We Call Home. And that will incorporate poetry and music and theater all around this very serious subject.
Yeah, I've read some of the material, and it'll be an entertaining evening. And if you get a chance, get over to the Hub. It's a little off the beaten path, but it's worth the trip.
It's the old teen center of Sedona.
The old teen center,
right next to the
skate
park.
It's very
nicely
done. Has spectacular views.
There's another aspect of what we were doing too, which was the trying to connect us all back to nature, which is this film that we came up with, which was fantastic. It's only been shown once last year in the Illuminate Film Festival, and Sharon Foster, who selects the films for the Illuminate, convinced the director to come out and allow the film to be shown before the theatrical release again at Mary Fisher Theater, and that's on Thursday, and it's called love thy nature. And it's a beautiful reminder of what this is all about, which is us being disconnected from nature, needing to reconnect. We all live here in Sedona, but, you know, we get busy too, and we forget to get out there, make that connection with the wildlife, with the beauty of what we live in, and remind us of why we want to look at the environment and care about the environment.
I'm on the board of the Verde River Valley Nature Organization, and these are the folks that bring you things like the Verde Runoff and in March, and the Birding Festival in April. But this is an estimate, but I believe 85% of the people that live in the Verde Valley have never been in, on, or at the Verde River, and I remember
it's spectacular
growing up here.
The flowers along the river, part of the season.
It was such a huge part of our lives. I mean, I'm in a daily part of if it was living close to it, and swimming and just fishing and my family, we took river walks. We would put on heavy shoes and walk up the middle of the river because how many rivers? I was raised on the Niagara River. Couldn't walk the Niagara River, but you can walk the Verde River. Point being that
Niagara River goes off a cliff somewhere.
It does go off a cliff about 22 miles from where I lived. It goes a little thing called Niagara Falls, but it stops eventually when it gets to the bottom. But anyway, the talking about those things that just the awareness aspect of it. Making people aware, which this movie that will be at Mary Fisher that we're talking about, the same kind of thing. This is just trying to get people to be aware of this incredible resource that runs through the middle of the Verde Valley. Not to mention its tributaries like Oak Creek, like Beaver Creek, like Clear Creek, like Sycamore Creek. And all the bodies of water we have around here.
Beautiful water around here. We think of it as a desert, but the Verde is beautiful, and Clear Creek is beautiful, and Oak Creek is beautiful. They're just spectacular. We have people coming from all over Arizona and the world to see all these things. We don't spend enough time maybe there ourselves. I worked for a long time as a tour guide, and we had a whole lot of people, particularly, well, I don't want to be too stereotyped, from back east, different places, who lived in cities and spent all their lives in cities. And when they arrived in Sedona, what we really tried to do is to, without preaching at them at all or even letting us try to reconnect them with nature. And Sedona is so beautiful, it does most of the job itself.
I'm not talking about enough time. I'm talking about any time. that have never been to the river. You know, the good news is there's more
water in it. I mean, what's to
more public access points. Go ahead.
And I'm just going to say, this is fascinating you're talking about this, because tonight in this film, Aluna, what the warning the Kogi actually gave, their conclusion at the end, these indigenous people that have been hiding and coming out, what do they have to tell us? Protect the water. That is the one thing they said. They're not talking about global warming. They're not talking about climate change. They're not talking about environmental destruction. The one thing that they are the most concerned about is our destruction, poisoning, and polluting of the water. And if people don't get down to the river like you're talking about, if we don't have a connection to this water is beautiful, oh, wait a second, we're mostly made of water. We need to drink water every day.
I think that's a very important point, Marty, is to emphasize that.
Well, I just second that. I think that's one of the biggest obstacles is the disconnect to nature of people today. There's books being written about it, Last Child in the Woods, The Nature Principle. This is the whole obstacle that we're trying to – we are part of this whole thing, except people have the disconnect that they aren't part of it and that they're not contributing. I think that is one of the basics that's going
true.
On here. We're in the early days, we were taught – some places said we're here to dominate nature, subject – you know, to our whims and all, it's made for us. Well, we are part of it. That's the whole key. And when you start thinking along those lines, you want to protect it. But that's where we've been. I think that's what a lot of this is to do, is to make sure we know we're connected.
Well,
so, yeah.
And speaking of water, I mean, we have the whole issue with, California running out of water, Nevada about to run out of water, and Arizona being next on that list. So,
yeah, there's plenty of articles right now about Arizona's looming water crisis. It's, I don't know.
So they're taking probably one of the biggest political issues in the world. I guess it's political. It's also a scientific issue. And making it local, right? All politics is local.
And I've heard, I was at an art thing the other day and listening to people talk about their voting choices because one candidate, and in this case I'm talking about county supervisor, has water experience, at least as far as his voter was concerned, and the other doesn't. And they're basing their voting choice on the person with experience with water. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's easy too to lose the perspective that how are these related? Water is directly related to climate change. Climate change equals degree rise of temperature equals also droughts. Droughts equal less water.
The leadership has been important. I think came through my email about thanking the senators that actually supported the awareness of climate change, Barbara Boxer and many others, which I'm not going to be able to name. But even having Obama take such a serious stand and realization, as Marty said, it affects national security, but it's so far away, and it's polar bears, and it's Bangladesh, and, you know, that doesn't seem to have that. So the efforts of organizations or these three people in this room and Inspiration of Sedona are critical.
I think that it's actually here, but we're just not fully aware of it yet. For example, the problem with the bark beetles, the change in temperature, the extra warmth is creating the longer lifespan for the bark beetles, which is why we're having the problems with the trees dying. And then the bigger fires, bigger, hotter, meaner fires. And also, you know, like the floods in Phoenix.
If we felt more a part of nature, and we've only got a couple of minutes left, would we act differently? If we didn't see us here and nature there, would we behave differently? Would it affect what we did? Would we care about things more if we didn't see this dominance, this control as the only thing we do? There's nothing wrong with building irrigation ditches or whatever it is, but you've got 2 minutes, Marty. Why don't you sum up for everybody? Or you've got a minute and a half.
I just wanted to say that I can say for myself that I was disconnected from nature when I grew up as a teenager. At some point, I fell in love with the Grand Canyon and northern Arizona, and I came here every 6 weeks and drove from California and hiked every trail in the Grand Canyon. That was my reconnection to nature at an early age, and that impelled me all these years to make all the changes, live a sustainable lifestyle, and now that's being brought, instead from just my personal life, the impelling and compelling need inside of me to bring this public and make it in the community and raise awareness and reconnect anyone that can be inspired to do so.
Tell us how they can connect up with Inspiration
of
Sedona.
They go to the Facebook page. You got these events coming up.
What's the address?
Where can they get this list of events that we're looking at?
It's at climatecareawareness.org is the website. It has all the events listed. And this evening, as well as having Aluna at the Hub, we have a fundamentals art studies with artists and mask makers that had made masks from our community. And those are on display starting at 6 o'clock. If people want to come before the performance at 6:30, I'm sorry, the film tonight, Aluna, at 6:30, you can look at that fundamentals art exhibit that's on there as well.
We've had a climate change show today, and we want to thank some of our helpers, the Democrats of the Red Rocks, that help us out with this. We want to thank Ledbetter Law, that's also given us some money over the years. And we want this show, and as all our shows are available on vvid.org. You can listen to the podcast on vvid.org, and we will send you a copy of this, as a matter of fact, if you ask real nice. And you can use it in your promotional materials or whatever. Thanks, guys. It was a great show on climate awareness, and we're looking forward to more. Thank you.
You've been
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.